Hi. Hello. Welcome to Freaks and Creeks, a Dawson's Creek podcast, the show where four millennials who missed the boat 25 years ago take the dive for the first time. Join us as we experience the series with a fresh perspective and see if our adolescent experiences match up with Dawson and the gang. My name is Cody.
I'm Stella.
I'm Mallory.
And I am James. And this week we are talking about season 2, episode 18, A Perfect Wedding.
Bow, bow, wow.
What a perfect wedding it was.
So perfect. I can't think of a more perfect wedding.
Me neither.
More perfect than ours.
Yeah, way better. We should have watched this episode before we planned our wedding.
It's an interesting choice that they decided to have all the characters get married in one episode.
Yeah. It was weird that they made them all get married to each other.
Yeah. But I get it.
Yeah.
I think I'm trying to do the numbers. How many characters are in the show? It's, I would say like 12 regular characters, which is a
perfect number.
12 uplet.
Yep.
Yes.
That's how you say it.
Yeah. 12 uplet. My big fat 12 uplet wedding.
Coming to TLC.
I love that movie.
All right, y'all. Are you ready for some Cape Side correspondence? So here's the deal, y'all. I only got one piece of Cape Side correspondence, so it's not looking good over here.
I hope you guys felt the venom in Stella's voice when she said that.
I'm upset.
Yeah, and I have to live with her. All I hear is cries, cries, cries. She checks her emails every morning and gets nothing.
We have to keep going in and marking unread. Old ones, just hoping.
Keep them coming, guys.
Yeah, please. But we did get a really cool, awesome, interesting email from Kirsten. Kirsten says, "Hey, y'all, loving the pod and wanted to add some historical context around the Jack's coming out storyline. In the kitchen, Graham's Ty Jensen, Ty makes veiled references to the AIDS epidemic. Quote, I just think his kind is damaging to the world at large. And, quote, the gay movement has been nothing but medically and morally damaging to this country. Quote. So that's interesting. Wasn't really thinking about that. Same. And we didn't really talk about that.
That is all I was thinking about because I was raised in a super conservative Christian house where my parents had Ronald Reagan, quote, calendars.
Oh, cool.
Shit. Like, yeah, it fucking sucked. So man, all that shit was like very much in my mind when watching this. Cause I mean, the Reagan era AIDS epidemic is only like 10 years, 15 years before this episode. Of course it's fresh in people's minds.
Wild. Yeah. This person goes on to say, this is rhetoric. The writers were probably taking from their own experiences. It wasn't uncommon for this kind of stuff to be said, unfortunately. I came out in 2004, not too many years after this, and while Jack's dad's reaction may seem overblown or overdramatic in 2024, when I first watched the show in the early 2000s, I was just relieved Jack wasn't kicked out or subjected to physical violence or sent to a conversion camp when he told his father he was gay. Things have changed a lot in the last 30 years, but I'm a licensed foster parent. Hey, nice. In one of the most politically left-leaning areas of the U.S., and I get emails weekly looking for placement of LGBTQ teens who've been kicked out of their homes. I was semi-out in high school, out to friends, not family, and there was kind of an unspoken understanding that you just keep your head down until you move out, go to college, and avoid the subject with your family because it's not worth the risk of homelessness or forced conversion therapy. Even with quote-unquote liberal accepting parents, you never know how someone who claims to support queer rights and even has queer friends will react when it's their own child. This is really interesting. Jack was only the second out gay teen character on a major network series, the first being Ricky on My So-Called Life in 1994, which was canceled before Dawson started airing. This was a major risk. Wow. Yeah, I had no idea. That's pretty wild.
Yeah.
It's insanely progressive for a TV show.
Kirsten sent us an article of an interview between Kevin Williamson and Greg Berlanti discussing the episodes of Jack coming out. And we read it and it was really interesting.
Super eye-opening. I mean, I think for there have been several episodes where we've discussed like what is Kevin Williamson's imprint on this show. Is Dawson supposed to be like a clear analog for Kevin Williamson? Was Jack's story true? And it kind of seems like all of that mixed up together is true. We'll post the link to the interview in our show notes so you can check it out if you haven't read this. But it was interesting to see Williamson say that he's written himself into like kind of like all these characters when Jack was brought onto the show as a character he wasn't necessarily intended to be gay, but as the show went along, Kevin Williamson thought this would be a good time to tell this kind of story. Really interesting, cool stuff.
Yeah, and they also in the new interview talk about how the poem was from someone's like a real experience that happened to someone's friend in school. So I thought that was really interesting. Yeah, it was.
Yeah,
it's a cool article.
I thought it was interesting, you know, like we're talking about now, just how far things have come to the point of Kirsten's email. There's an interesting quote from Kerr Smith as well towards the end of the article where he says like he could kind of, you know, he could sense that something was coming between with his character on the show. And Kevin Williamson calls him out and he says, hey, let's go get coffee. And he's like, oh boy, here it comes. And he, you know, Kevin Williamson tells him, hey, we want to take character in the new in a new direction. And Kerr Smith said something like oh God, now I need to call like everybody I know because I have a big decision to make. And you know, it is a big decision, obviously. Yeah. it was a historic thing to be the second out character on a major network drama like they're talking about. But just the fact that it was that big of a decision for him, that even just playing a gay character on TV he was worried about.
Yeah.
You know, he doesn't want to be, maybe he didn't want to be, I'm projecting here, maybe he didn't want to be typecast or, you know, blacklist for being this gay character on TV in a time when, like, they're dealing with in the writing of the show, right? There's like a big issue with homosexuality culturally in America. So I thought that was telling because now he, what, I mean, maybe an actor would have a problem with it personally, or they just don't want to do it because they don't want to offend people. But I don't think they would be like, I need to call all my friends and consult my family to make sure this is right for me.
Yeah. Last little tidbit in the email, Kirsten says, I think one of y'all has mentioned being a Buffy fan. If you recall that Joss Whedon had to threaten to quit the show in order to force the network just to get them to air the first Willow Tara kiss in 2001, knowing that Dawson is on the same network will likely give you some background on how much the show had to fight for this storyline to even be portrayed.
Yeah, and it's funny because I like just got to that point in my Buffy rewatch, and it's pretty ridiculous that those characters, they're in a relationship for about like a season, almost like an entire season, and before they're even allowed to kiss on camera. Which is fucking crazy. And the darkest thing about that is that when they do have their first kiss, I won't spoil anything for people that are like interested in watching Buffy, but there's an episode called The Body, which is extremely emotional and traumatic, and it's about a character dying, and it's very upsetting. And the only reason they were those two characters were allowed to kiss each other in the episode was because Whedon had to say that it's because they're consoling each other and it's not sexual or romantic, which is fucking crazy.
Damn.
And like, also like, just like, that's all I think about when I do watch that episode too, when that does, because it's like such a huge moment seeing them kiss for the first time. And you're like, damn, they had to wrap it up in something else just to like allow this to be on TV.
Wow.
But I did appreciate that they wrote that in the email too, because it's crazy. Same network.
Yeah.
All this is going on.
Yeah. It makes me wonder just like, if we're going to see much of like Jack's relationship with other men or how that will be continue to be portrayed.
Yeah, I really wonder because so far now Jack is out in his sexuality, but he's not able to really be in his sexuality, if that makes sense.
Exactly, yeah. I'm really worried that he'll start dating another man and then it's going to be like Buffy. It'll take like a season and a half just to see them kiss or show any kind of affection.
And if it's anything like most 90s media around the homosexual experience, one of them is going to get sick and die. So
exactly. I'm so scared that it's going to be, they're just going to like wrap it into tragedy and it's just going to be tropey.
But hopefully not. Yeah. I mean, well, I mean, I don't know which, I don't know where to hope, honestly, yeah. to be quite honest with Jack. But
if anything, how they're handling Jack right now feels really good.
Yeah.
Up to this point, it's not a like an archetypal kind of gay character that you'd imagine in the 90s. Mm-hmm. He feels like a fleshed out human being.
Yeah.
So I don't know. We'll see.
I think they're letting him bring his own choices to the role as well. It's not, he's not just the writer's room telling him what to do. So hopefully that allows it to feel like a, to your point, more authentic character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Excuse me. Sorry. The last line of this email, Kirsten says, I do hope the Dawson Creek vampire episode will include some Buffy crossover. Capesite is definitely on a hellmouth.
I agree. Yes.
Love the pod, Kirsten.
Thank you, Kirsten.
Thank you so much. And that concludes Capeside Correspondence.
Wow.
Over and out.
Woo-hoo. No Apple Review Podcast this week.
No Apple Review Damn Podcast. It.
For the love of God, people, please give us a five-star review.
We don't ask for much. But apparently it's too much.
And tell your friends.
Yes. Tell your friends.
All
and tell them to write a five-star review.
Yep. Go on the Facebook and just update your status and say, write a five-star review.
Are people on Facebook?
What's Facebook?
I logged in recently because I was just like, what's going on here? Wow, wee Sally. Nothing. That's the answer. Fuck.
It's like the gif of Grandpa Simpson walking in and then turning around and immediately leaving. That's how I feel whenever I have to go on Facebook.
I'm sure other people feel this way too, but I'm like, do I just delete this?
Mm.
But
marketplace,
it's like the only way
marketplace
that it's true.
Yeah. There's so many photos.
There's so many pictures, and it's kind of the only way I interact with a lot of my family and like high school friends. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's weird. It feels like a weird lifeline that I have to keep open, but I have absolutely no interest in.
Yeah. You can download your Facebook, and it downloads every post that's ever been on it, like all of that data. Mm-hmm. I did that, and then I deleted everything I've ever posted on Facebook and then locked it.
Smart.
So it's like, I have this only for Marketplace, nothing else.
That's probably not a bad idea.
All right.
Wow.
Shall we get into it?
I guess. Yeah.
Okay, so once again, we are talking about season 2, episode 18, A Perfect Wedding. This episode aired on April 28th, 1999. A Capeside wedding forces Joey to face up to her family's reputation. This is written by Mike White.
Woohoo!
Yay!
And directed by Gregory Prang.
Gregory Prang.
Gregory Prang.
Sorry, I don't mean to make fun of Prang gang. Yeah, I'm a hashtag Prang gang guy.
Yeah, it doesn't sound familiar. Is this his first Dawson?
It must be. It's the first time it sounds. I'm hearing the name. I wonder how many times he'll come back. What if he's a big season 3 player?
Like, I just clicked his IMDb and it said Dawson's Creek 128 episodes. And I was like, there's no way he directed that many. But then that's just the episode count of Dawson's Creek.
Like, he was retroactively involved. He's worked his way up from like best boy grip up to directing an episode. This is his hero story.
He's a producer on it. So maybe he.
What a guy. Thanks, Prang Gregory. Prang.
He directs 16 episodes up until 2003. All right.
Okay. Well, he's not going anywhere anytime soon. And what a first episode to come in on.
Ay, ay, ay.
Ugh. I don't even know what
we'll
to say.
We'll get into it.
Yep. Honk shoe indeed. Cody, you want to take us away?
Folks, lick your fingers and stick them right in the air. Do you feel that breeze turning in a new direction? That's because you're still coping with the status quo changes in the last several episodes. Our boy Dawson is still reeling from being told his cinematic masterpiece is more of a Madame Web. And Capeside's favorite drug dealer, none other than Joey's daddy, Mike Potter, has just gotten paroled. Where do we go from here? Well, as it turns out, Bessie Potter has landed a big catering gig for a wedding. And Papa Potter will be putting on those callous house hands to work by lending his help. Wait, this is a whirlwind, guys. He just got home. Joey hasn't had a second to catch her breath. And now she's expected to do this gig and pretend the Potters are one big happy family? And on top of that, Bessie needs Joey to recruit her buds to help out with the wedding? Give her a break, Dawson's Creek writer's room. Thankfully, our heroes are up for the fancy task. Dawson and Jack will wait on the guests while Pacey and Andy handle cake duty. Speaking of which, Andy isn't so pleased. She hates weddings and finds the ceremony and its traditions archaic, saccharine, and simply lame. But Pacey, on the other side of the fence, our sweet boy loves weddings. It makes his heart burst. Will he be able to convince Andy that romance is alive and well? Well, let's hope so, because Mr. and Mrs. Manmeet will also be at this wedding, and Gail thinks it's maybe sort of time to try and rekindle her relationship with Mitch Daddy. Fingers crossed. But wait, who are we forgetting? Ah, yes, Jen, of course. Like the writers, Joey has also forgotten about our sad nothing-to-do friend and didn't invite her to help out with the wedding. But who cares, since she's recently patched things up with Evil Abby, they're going to find some of their own mischief to get into. I sure hope no one dies. The wedding commences, as does the trials and tribulations of our heroes. Dawson finds the bride in shambles, hiding from guests and waiting to leave. He tries to console her, but he, of course, just makes her more miserable, like us. Leave it to Jack to work his magic. He gives her a speech for the ages, explaining that true love is complex and it's okay to be scared. It's a leap of faith, y'all. And over in the kitchens, Andy accidentally does a Mortal Kombat fatality to the top of the wedding cake while she gives an impassioned speech on weddings being stupid. Is this a message from above that weddings and true love in general are cursed? Don't worry, folks. Pacey the hero smashes together what's left of that cake and is able to make it as good as new. Hey, symbolism. Over in the kitchens, Joey is losing it. The stress from the wedding gig and Papa Potter is just too much. How can Bessie act like everything's normal? This is their father that cheated on their mother while she was dying and then went to prison, leaving Joey as the mockery target of small town gossip. But you know what? All it takes is one little heart-to-heart between Jojo and Papa to make things right. He selfishly believed everything would be fine and dandy while he was away and that things would quickly go back to normal. Nuh-uh, Mr. Potter. Y'all have some serious work to do. And man, oh man, is Gail looking as spicy as ever. She's ready to seduce Mr. Manmeet. But uh-oh, Mitch shows up with a pretty lady on his arm. It's none other than Capeside High School film teacher Nicole Kennedy.
Yay.
You bet your buns they're an item, and things are awkward for both Gail and Dawson. How will they recover? Stay tuned. Jen and Abby show up and get schwasty. How rude. They weren't even invited to this wedding. Andy gives them the boot. These kids will have to find somewhere else to post up and get blasted. And with that, all things are grand. Pacey successfully convinces Andy that weddings and love are pretty neat. Papa Potter makes his first public appearance without a hint of snide remarks. And are you holding on to something? After Dawson gives Joey an impassioned speech that she'll always persevere in the face of any challenge and that he'll always be there for her, they link up on the dance floor. They slow dance. Their faces get closer together. Can this be it? Yes. Yes, it happens. A smooch for the ages. These intertwined souls have become one once again at long last. A pretty good night, all in all. Well, not for everyone. Jen and Abby, with a stolen bottle of champagne, end up at the top of a large multi-leveled boat dock to drink away their worries over some laughs. Haha. Abby reveals a sad belief that she'll never, ever be truly happy. Bonk, slip, splash. Abby drunkenly hits her head and falls straight into the water. Not coming up for air, Jen jumps in right after to save her, but is unsuccessful. Sometime later, the paramedics arrive and load up an Abby-filled body bag into an ambulance before taking off, leaving Jen very wet, very sad, and very alone.
This episode fucking sucks so bad. I just have to get out and say it. You guys need to convince me this episode doesn't suck because this episode was the worst episode I've watched so far.
Yeah,
I fucking hate it.
I don't think I can convince you.
I think it's a praying issue.
A praying issue?
No, praying.
A director issue?
Director. Oh. Do you remember Praying Gang, y'all?
I thought you were telling me I haven't been praying hard enough.
No. Well, that too. But listeners, I want you to give us a 5-star review, and all I want you to write in the review is hashtag praying gang.
Hashtag praying gang.
Because this episode has beats to it, right? Like
yes.
Everyone, mm-hmm. It's yeah. The shit that we've all been talking about for so long. Give everyone something to fucking do.
Yeah.
Give them their own stories, their own things to do, and Mike White does write that into the show. Everyone has something to do.
For sure.
But it has such a glacial pace and everyone has such an obvious trajectory to, we all know where it's going.
Right.
But it's just so weirdly paced.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. It's just like nothing's really happening for so fucking long until a character literally dies that you finally can wake up from your honk shoeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The entirety of the episode is basically you're just at the wedding.
You're just at the wedding.
And the wedding is completely shoehorned in for no fucking reason. It's oh yeah, it's Bessie's friend. It's Bessie's friend's wedding.
Who she never interacts with.
Yes.
she never interacts with, whose caterer fell through at the last minute, and somehow we got the thing. Like, everything about it is just so convenient, and it's so fucking annoying. And then that's what we spend the entire time doing.
And I think way too much time on that character, the bride.
Yes.
Yes.
Like, who is that?
Yeah. Why do we care? What?
I mean,
well, it's all just a MacGuffin.
Yes.
Yeah. It's just for these characters to do things and learn about things.
Oh,
and
it's
like, if we break it down, bride crying is just to show us that Dawson does not know how to fucking talk to human beings and just like fucks things up. But it takes Jack and his, like, I don't know, down to earth speech to bring Dawson in, to Dawson learns from, to get Joey back. So it's like, I can see why these things are happening, but it's so haphazardly put together. Mm-hmm. It's so weird.
It is very, very weird.
Yeah, like the first watch, I was just like, what is happening? What is this? Like, this is terrible. Second watch, I actually appreciated it more. So I think that, like,
there's
something to what Cody's saying where it's like, it's there, but the pacing, it's just like,
it's
put together weird. I don't.
The pacing is, I think, one of the biggest issues, but it's not the biggest issue in the episode. But watching it, I mean, the first time I watched it, same experience, I was just like, holy fuck, what is happening? And then all of a sudden, Abby dies?
Yeah.
Like in the 11th hour of this episode, they're just like, yeah, let's kill her. So then she dies, and then that's how it ends, which feels completely unrelated to the whole rest of the episode. It's just like they had to make this happen, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was trying to draw a parallel of, like, her death with, like, life and love.
I think the parallel is Jen's new beginning. It's more about Jen than it is about Abby. You know,
and I think it's also to give that I feel like the whole point of it was for Abby to have that speech where she basically says, like, I don't know if I'll ever be happy, no matter where I am, no matter what I have, I'm always going to want something else or to be somewhere else. And I feel like that was what they wanted Abby to be able to say. And they knew they'd never be able to let her say that if she was still alive. So as soon as she said it, they're like, well, we got to fucking she's set her ethos. Let's make sure she falls in and then turns blue. She's a Smurf now.
Her face looked so swollen.
Oh my gosh.
I can't believe we saw the body. That is insane. Yeah.
At first, I was like, because we're seeing it, she can't be dead. She's just sad, sleeping.
Inside of a body bag.
It felt so tasteless
and
weird.
And then just like Jen being like abandoned on the street.
Yes. No, what? Like, no,
the ambulance isn't going to, the police isn't going to ask her question. Like,
Grams isn't there. So her family hasn't been notified that she was just recovered from the fucking freezing ocean or sea, whatever it is.
Really crazy.
Crazy.
Why do we think this happened? Like, why is Abby killed off of this show? Like, what do you believe?
I think it has everything to do with Jen. I mean, I don't know, like, who knows what the actress who plays Abby, like, why she wasn't going to be on the show anymore. But I think, like, the way that they wrote this has everything to do with Jen.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess since we're talking about it, I'm going to talk about the costuming, because in the first scene that we see with Abby and Jen, Abby is wearing a red shirt and a feathery black sweater with like feathers looking like kind of horns. So it's like it's like a dark, devilish, kind of like sinister look. Almost like in this scene, she's like Jen's devil on her shoulder. You know, like the devil and the angel, like Jen's devil on her shoulder. That's kind of what she's been for Jen, right? She's been the person who is
tempting
Jen. And Jen's wearing this like really plain like gray jacket.
Millennial silver.
It's like silver, millennial silver. And then later, so they're at the wedding, they're wearing like dresses, whatever. But later at the dock, they essentially swap outfits.
Mm.
Abby is wearing Jen's actual coat.
The
She's wearing Jen's coat, yeah.
Yeah.
And then Jen is wearing a red coat with black feather trim. So it's like swapped, but it's her own outfit.
So do you think that means that they're going to have Jen become this kind of like
bad
evil
girl?
I wonder. Yeah. So I think so they essentially swapped. And I don't know if this, like, I think basically Abby's death signifies maybe it's either like the death of Jen as we know her, and the beginning of a new Jen, totally. Or like Jen going on another, like more of a, like, you know, rebellious, like, stage. I don't know.
Yeah, I like that. I didn't notice that, but I think I bet that we're going to see Jen go down a dark path because she's been struggling quite a bit, and she articulated it quite bluntly in this episode.
Yes.
Like, nobody fucking cares what I do. Mm-hmm. I'm just, and the only fun I've had has been with you, Abby, which is like,
that does not make any fucking sense.
No, it was, that was such a 180. It's like, what?
Don't you remember slapping her?
That part felt very shoehorned in, but I kind of by the end understood like this is why they did this.
Yeah. But the thing that I just like do not understand of Jen saying like, well, I'm out of the loop. I'm not a part of the core fucking four. You're not in the intro of the show. What the fuck are you talking about, dude? Four episodes ago, you were making a movie with Dawson and you were his producer.
Yeah.
Like your only friend is not Abby.
No.
Like, since when are you excluded?
It doesn't make sense. It feels so out of left field for this to suddenly happen. And it's because they're fucking making it happen so that she can get killed.
Yeah.
Abby can get killed. Because also, why wasn't Jen asked to
work the wedding?
Exactly. Yeah. It makes no sense.
It makes no sense.
But she's kind of been...
She was like off doing her thing with Tyson.
Yeah, she's kind of been on the app a little bit the last couple
Dawson
episodes, right?
In on that. She was bringing
They brought him to the jazz club.
I mean, like...
So sexy.
It's so sexy.
God damn it, I miss it.
And she was at Dawson's birthday party.
Yeah.
So what the fuck? She hasn't been excluded.
But we've been talking about how we don't know who Jen is. Like, right?
Yeah.
Like, so... I mean, it was kind of a weird way to do it, but I do feel like it was...
I agree.
They're still figuring Jen out.
I just think we're doing the work of the show now. And I think you're totally right. Like, the writing is on the walls. They just didn't actually write that on the walls. We are writing it on the walls to explain their shitty decision-making.
Yeah.
And also, I think, I was like, if I'm in the room and I'm trying to play... I'm in the room and I want to kill off Abby because she fucking sucks as a character, right? Like, I'm thinking about all these characters and this is arguable, but I think for the most part, they're all pretty fleshed out. I know who these people are inside and out. I've given enough evidence except for Jen to be like, oh, like Jack, I know who that guy is. Like Dawson, I sadly understand who that guy is. What a piece of shit. But with Abby, she's a cartoon. She does not belong in the Dawson's Creek universe. She's from something that's like way more heightened and weird.
Yeah.
Maybe like she would have fit in the pilot of Dawson's Creek where everyone was heightened and weird.
She's like a Audrey Horn.
Yeah.
Like just, foil.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, from Twin Peaks.
Super weird. Hey, we mentioned Twin Peaks.
Hey, we got it.
And we're recording this on Twin Peaks Day.
Okay, there we go.
It's 11:30. I was wondering if her crashing the wedding is supposed to symbolize her crashing Dawson's Creek. Like her character was never meant to be there.
Interesting.
And maybe this is like, I don't know, this writer's room did change a lot as the show evolved. So maybe this was a character that was brought in that now they're regretting that decision. So they're like, let's symbolize it with her crashing this show that we never wanted her to be on. And now we're going to bonk her head a little bit.
Yeah, it's like they never really knew what to do with her. I mean, except for stick her to Jen.
Yeah.
It did feel like, you know, there were some episodes where Abby was like really, really mean. I feel like more in the first season, she was more just kind of like, you know.
Fun mean.
Yeah, fun mean. And this episode felt more like that. It was like, oh, this is the Abby that we all kind of liked. Like it just felt really like harmless. And it made me like be like, oh, I want more of Abby because this is fun to see, you know.
Return to form.
Yeah.
Yeah, because so much of her lately has just been this, like, for example, the student Jackson. President or the whatever the fuck episode.
With
student
the election. Yeah.
Anyway, that episode, she's like digging way. Anyway, so.
And then with Jack, and then the stuff with Jack too. Yep. It's just like.
So to your question, why do we think this happened, Cody? You know, why do we think that she suddenly got killed? I remember reading about Monica Keena because I was like, who is this person? Where did she, what did she do? Did she ever really do anything off after Dawson's Creek? And I went to her IMDb. She worked in a bunch of like kind of like made for TV style movies. She tried to have a career, but it didn't really seem to really work out for her. But when I was on that and I was reading through her, her like profile and stuff, there was a bit of trivia that she apparently like had approached the Dawson's Creek writing staff and asked to be written off the show. This is like in season one. She was like, she basically had a boyfriend in New York City. They're filming in North Carolina and Wilmington. Yeah. They're filming on location. So she has to leave and do this all the time. And she's like, I don't want to be on this show anymore. This isn't worth it. You know, I'm going to be a big starlet if I get off this show. So just write me off this show.
Mm. Interesting.
And the writer's room is like unwilling to do it. They're like, no, we need you. We need your character here. Mm. So they keep making her come out and into season two. And then I didn't know that this happened, but I guarantee you she just made it a big problem for them. Mm. I bet she was a nightmare on set. I bet she just continued to do
like she is.
Yeah. I bet she just like made it to where they're like, I'm going to keep doing this until you fucking kill me. And then they're like, fine, let's kill you, you know? Mm. So I think you're right. She crashed Dawson's Creek. Mm. And they're giving her that moment on
That's
air.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
It's sad. I'm looking at her IMDb and her career really floundered.
Never really done developed.
That much. Yeah. Hmm.
She was on a Judd Apatow series, but like I think it was the post Judd Apatow boom. You know, it was after he had already anything he touched was gold.
Sure, yeah. That's sad. I mean, I think she's really fun to watch.
Yeah.
She has, I mean, she's magnetic. Oh, she was in Orange County? That's fun.
Yeah, she just eats up screen time, and I'm surprised that she never amounted to anything. So, you know, maybe there's, and that's also like the IMDb trivia section. Who fucking knows?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I am seeing, like, I mean, if she was in Orange County, Mike White wrote and directed that. And so it's like, I wonder if they still had a good relationship after that. I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
Abby's last words were, don't laugh, that hurt you, bitch.
I love that. I think that, you know, that for me, that moment is the only thing that's worth talking about in this episode because it's the only thing that has any value. And I kind of go back and forth on that one, like all of that. What do we think is going to happen? What's the fallout of Abby's death going to be for the core four? Like, for example, specifically, Andy. She's the one who kicks them out of the wedding.
Exactly. I think it's going to be the biggest impact on Andy and Jen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like I can easily see them thinking that they're responsible for
totally.
That.
Oh, yeah. And definitely. Jen, I mean, I thought that they shot it in a way that was so clear. Jen had nothing physically to do with Abby's falling off and ultimately dying. And she tries to jump in after, but at the same time, she laughs and she does kind of like, you know, she's there contributing to the situation. Mm-hmm. So she's obviously going to hold herself responsible. But like, what about Jack? You know, he just was starting to form a kind of relationship with Abby. I know he got double crossed, but still, this just happened like last episode.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so weird.
It also is interesting that like right before when that conversation between the two of them where Abby is saying like, I don't think I'm ever going to be happy. It's like the most like serious or sincere we've ever seen her in that last moment. And that really actually made me quite sad. She's like, oh, this is heartbreaking. And then for her to die, I was just like,
because in reality, she's just another season one Pacey.
Yep.
Like she's like putting on this big front to be this character that everyone expects her to be when in reality, you know, we all have multitudes, right?
Right.
And we learned that right before she got killed off.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The only other time that we were made to feel anything for Abby was when she was like, my parents are divorced. Oh, yeah. My mommy doesn't pay attention to me.
Wasn't it the opposite? Like, my family's normal, and that's why I'm so bored.
Sorry, I made it more spicy. Yeah. It was that boring. I was like, fuck, there had to be something.
Well, I think it was they were divorced, but then that was it. Like, that was like, you know. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, why didn't they just have her, like, move or something, not, like, kill her off, you know?
That would have been normal, but they had to send a message. And I think they also had to send a message to Capeside. Like, Capeside has to deal with something now.
Oh, yeah. And Jen.
Yeah. That's the thing, too. I thought this was going to be something that would come, like, a lot later in the show. Because it feels like a jumping the shark moment in any series when you kill off a character in a romantic drama for teens.
Yeah.
It's like, is that really the last little thing you need to like create drama in this show? It makes me feel like they're running out of ideas, but we're also talking about the actor that wanted off the show and they were trying to figure out how to do that in a way that would impact the characters that could make them grow. So it's, I too early to tell really what this will impact the show.
Also, this episode, Jen says that she's just like so bored. And I think either in the episode before this or two episodes ago, Joey also says that she's feeling so bored. Mm-hmm. So I wonder if that has, you know, they're just like feeling maybe pretty like burnt out with this season and they just like needed something to happen.
Mm. I mean, they're writing themselves into corners that can only be satisfied with things like people being in relationships. You can only stretch that for so long. So if I was a writer for the show, fuck, dude, I would be so bored as well if that's I don't know if it's studio notes saying like we need more of will Dawson get Joey or shit like that. But it's like you can do more with this show than just that. Mm-hmm. Explore these characters. And there's ways to do that without murdering someone.
Yeah. Yeah. And also like without cheapening everything, because just murdering Abby cheapens that whole, this whole episode, and also cheapens that. But also like as another example, just bringing her dad back and then all of a sudden life is like, hey, let's just get back. Everything's normal now, right? Like we've got a catering gig that we now need to figure it out. Without any kind of anything happening, it's just that's the next scene. Also feels cheap as fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know?
I kind of liked it though, only because that's what Joey's freaking out about.
I agree. It's great drama and it's great tension, yeah. But it just felt very like weird to me to have it be the exact next thing. But speaking of drama and speaking of tension, it's time to take a break.
Joey daddy. Yeah. So
daddy-o.
Well, the thing that I wish this show did is have a more organic feel to the townspeople hating her family and thinking that she sucks and her dad is a freak. I mean, like the only thing we've ever really gotten is her telling, no showing. She's always been like, yeah, always the town gossip, you know, yeah. But we never really see anything until today when we get two people that we've never seen in the show before talk extremely loudly with Joey 5 feet fucking away being like, there's JoJo. Everyone knows that her family's a freak show. Like no one would ever do that in reality. I know it's a TV show, but this seemed so crazy.
And I like that what they say, I think is what those two ladies say about her dad is like, he shouldn't be released. Don't they know that he cheated on his wife?
Illegal in Capeside. Yeah.
So he shouldn't have been paroled because he cheated. I mean, like, come on, cheaters suck, but really?
It's like, so weird.
It's just like the most shoehorned in moment in an episode full, literally just fucking full. It's like, oops, all shoehorned in scenes. Mm-hmm.
It, like, it's not that hard, like, it would be so much easier to have this as something that's in the background that you don't really need to point out, but have every scene of Joey in Capeside High, have just one or two characters in the background always just like kind of like turning and like whispering at her. Just like make it a background thing so you like have that feel of her in Capeside and it feels lived in and real instead of what we're given here.
Or have somebody come and prank them at the ice house by bringing a big bag of like oregano for the dad and being like, for your delivery, Mr. Potter. And then he's like, get out of here. You know, like give us that kind of shit where we're actually seeing stuff happening that feels relevant instead of what we saw, which was completely artificial.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It also seems just like so funny that he was released with no notice. Like, wouldn't like the family have an idea?
Bessie knew, maybe.
Oh, really?
But well, how? They didn't show it. Yeah. But
he shows up at the door. Like,
maybe Joey didn't know because I don't know. Bessie's kind of like the caretaker there. So, maybe Bessie knew and Joey didn't. I don't know.
We know that Joey has an interesting relationship with the responsibilities that are involved with her father, because she was blindsided by the fact that they alternate every other visit at the prison. Yeah. And then we've never seen her go back since then. So I think she may have forgotten that he's in there.
But it seems so weird because the last interaction we saw with Papa Potter is that they rekindled the relationship to the point that he was already giving her relationship advice with Dawson. So you'd think that she'd keep up with him since then. Yeah. And if I found out that daddy was coming home, I would tell my sister that I live with who also takes care of my son. Like this, they're all they have. They work together.
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't make any sense.
It is very odd that immediately upon this reunion. Yes.
Reunion.
Reunion.
Coming this fall. Reunion.
From Toby, the makers of Tracker.
Toby Keith. He just died, didn't he?
Yep.
Okay, he's back from the dead.
Rest in piss.
Anyway,
that dude fucking sucks.
Yes, he did. Yeah. He did. Right after reuniting the family, they're immediately like, pull the rug out from Joey. She is being blindsided by her being excluded from a plan that her sister and her dad were making
overnight. Before
she woke up.
Overnight, yeah.
Real quick.
Because he just got back yesterday, like that night. And then that next morning, they have an entire plan.
So let's play this out. So Bessie figures this out when? That night? Like after Joey goes to sleep.
Joey goes to sleep at 10 o'clock because she's got to wake up at 6 for school. So sometime between 10 and maybe like 1 o'clock, her friend calls her and says, hey, it's your best friend. I'm getting married tomorrow. You probably didn't hear.
Yes.
These people are not friends. If this is the first you're hearing about this wedding. You're not a bridesmaid, by the way. But is there any way that you could just like shut down your restaurant for a day and lose a day's worth of money so you can come and give us food? I'll pay for it. Like, fucking crazy.
No. Yeah, and they're like, I couldn't tell if they were saying like catering in general, but like it sounded like Bessie was saying like this specific event was going to help them with their debts.
Exactly.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like, what?
It's really confusing.
Well, I think what they're playing on is they're getting basically a wedding catering contract, which would be bloated because of the wedding tax, right? So it's huge. And maybe it also sets up their wedding catering business that they're now going to be launching.
Ice House on Wheels?
Yes, yeah. Ice House on Wheels. But yeah, I love that idea that they call her up and they're like, hey, yeah, the Ice House, that food that is mediocre. I love the burgers and fries. Do you think you could do something completely different my place this weekend?
And Joey, I think it's
like 200 fucking people.
And I think it's Joey that specifically says like all the blue bloods are going to be there, right?
Yes,
so it's like a bunch of aristocrats and they're going to eat fish and chips.
Yes, I love it.
And then like later that day, Daddy, who we find out his name is Mike. I think that's the first time we hear his first name.
Mike Potter. Not a real name.
Nope.
He's Dirk just whipping Boston. Up some like horseradish salmon.
I know. See, in my mind, like he had culinary skills before and like helped maybe open the Ice House.
Must
and then
have been.
When he was in prison, he's been like thinking of all these plans because he has nothing else to do. And then he gets out and he's got all these ideas that he gives Bessie. Mm. And that's like what I've made up in my mind.
Okay.
But
I like that.
I don't know.
I cannot believe.
Why didn't we see any of that?
Yeah.
I cannot believe I haven't put this together yet.
And then competition for.
Hold on.
Joey's,
the kelp.
I mean, for the kelp.
Yes. Hold on.
That's what I'm thinking.
Oh, fuck.
But what if, because now Mitch Daddy is going around town dating whoever he wants. What if Mitch Daddy ends up with Bessie?
Oh.
Whoa.
Whoa.
What?
When he saw that hair.
When he saw that tarantula on her head.
Yeah.
He was like,
fuck me. Yeah.
You stole my line. Let's talk about the real star of this episode, Bessie's hair.
Can we name it? Can we name her hair?
So I've
hairstyle?
Seen an updo. This is not an updo.
No, like a name. Like this
I know.
Hair. Okay.
What is the name?
Stacy.
Oh, you want to give it like a name?
A name. Yes, this hairstyle deserves it. Like it's a character.
Jennifer.
Jennifer?
Donna.
Jennifer?
I forgot what
the Donna.
I also forgot Jen existed.
Donna. I like the Donna. God.
Donna's cool, yeah.
The Donna.
Yeah.
That was some wild hair.
Wow.
Why? So she has a restaurant that she works in all the time. And part of being in a restaurant is, hey, let's make sure we don't get hair in the food. Big one. I'd say that's second to let's make sure we don't spit in the food. You know, also poop pee, all that stuff. So what does she do? She's like, let's just get the hair as crazy as we possibly can.
I'm going to make the hair the loudest thing on my body.
I want to make it as big and crazy, and it's going every direction as it possibly can. I want to know how they did that, too. How did they get it? Because it's long. So how did they get it up top so short? Right,
it's like
here?
A bunch of little bangs. It's like,
it's like a Queen Amidala haircut.
I hated it so much.
She couldn't do anything for this. She's been working on that hair all week. She's like, I've got a vision.
Have we ever seen anyone in the Ice House wear a hairnet?
No. Have we ever seen anybody in the Ice House besides the mysterious magical hobo?
True, that's...
And Abby and her friends?
Has anyone on The Bear ever worn a hairnet?
No.
Because that guy, Jeremy Allen White?
Oh,
I think they have.
Maybe.
I think they've shown some.
But he's got like the sexiest hair I've ever seen.
I don't think he has.
So they're like, this man cannot be in a hairnet.
Tina, maybe.
Okay. Tina,
Okay, did you finish your train of thought about Mitch?
Oh, I had a thought there.
Oh.
It's named the Ice House. Mm-hmm. What is a prison if not a house of ice? You're frozen. You can't leave.
Oh, yeah, that's good.
You're frozen in time. You're cryogenically frozen. It's like you're in prison. like Han Solo, who is, of course, cryogenically frozen.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So is the ice house a metaphor? Did he know he was going to prison when he opened the ice house? Is he an emotional prison when he opened the ice house?
Mm-hmm. We've talked about the arrested development of all these characters. Like, they're all stuck in their ways. Also a great show. But all these people do not know how to move on. As we've seen, and we'll get into it, but Dawson and Joey coming back together again does not feel good. I feel like they're both regressing in their who they are as people because of all the trauma they've recently experienced. So the ice house is Capeside. They're all frozen in these roles, and they do not want to escape from it.
Mm-hmm. Fuck. And sometimes they can't escape from it. Like Jen can't escape from her past being her present.
Yeah.
And her future.
Yikes. I don't want to leave the Joey Daddy stuff is really funny because it's inorganic. It happens so quickly and it's also settled so quickly.
Yes.
Like you'd think this would be like a season long story arc of her trying to rebuild her family. And I'm sure we're going to get more of this, but the way that they ended in the episode is so hunky dory. Like we're going to tie a bow on this. It's over and done with. We had the one conversation to talk about him being a little too quick to get back to normal.
Yeah.
Like they have a lot of work to do, but then they dance at the end and everything's great. So
and
it's like
he's like, I'm not ready to come out to the public yet. And then he should. Next scene, he's out.
Yeah, I need to go put my suit on. Obviously, I can't go out my chef whites. Fuck, Joey. It's like, no, Dad, I didn't mean right now. Okay. I could have waited 5 minutes.
And it's such an old fashioned idea to be like, oh, if you see someone in a suit, that means they're all cleaned up and good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the acceptance of, oh, Gail, will you dance with me? Oh, yes. Okay. We accept you back into society, you know.
Yes. I wonder if that's ever going to be a thing.
That's what I originally thought. I was like, is Mike Potter going to get in on Mr. Man Meets Turf? And then that's going to make it both weird for Dawson as well as Mr. Man Meat. Mm. You know?
I saw it as more of a friendly thing, but I wonder if it's a little, foreshadow for something.
I just hate that like all of these individual stories in this episode are wrapped up so quickly. And it's like, they're all, it's not an A story. It's not a B story. It's like a Z story, especially the fucking Pacey and Andy
on top of the cake.
Second episode in a row with a cake disaster.
Oh yeah.
That is interesting.
Whoa. Right? Was that two ago?
Doesn't matter. Second
Wasn't
episode
row,
of the season.
Second episode of the season
one,
with
one
a cake
too many cake
disaster.
Disasters.
Yeah, it's pretty weird.
I feel like you could have underscored all of Pacey and Andy's scenes with like a laugh track and slapstick.
Oh my gosh! Yeah.
Sound effects, and you would have gotten a better episode because that's what they're doing. They're just doing like the Bert and Ernie fucking yuck it up. Like let's joke and let's laugh. Let's laugh at these two fuck ups.
Weird. It took them so long to fix that cake. And I don't even know how they did it. It
doesn't make sense.
Pacey's just like slapping it together. And then the next time we see it, it's like perfect.
I do think that a lot of the issues come down to direction. And I do love Mike White, but his writing for these characters in this episode was so weird and bad.
Yeah.
They had nothing to really talk about except for one subject. And that is like why it feels kind of glacially paced, because it's not like we're seeing any progress until there is no progress. It just goes from A to B. It's just she doesn't like weddings. Now she likes weddings.
And the thing is she's like the big moment is effectively where Pacey is like, all right, I'm not doing anything until you admit that you love weddings. Mm-hmm. And then she does.
That's it.
Cool. But like, she doesn't really admit to it in a believable way. It's not like she like has this big emotional moment. It's almost like she is more stressed about not getting the cake finished. And she's just saying whatever she needs to get. So is this even actually closure to this fucking storyline in any way, shape, or form? No. Well,
I think there's a little bit. So like what I saw in that, trying to see something, right? So there's a little bit of like the symbolism of like imperfection. Like she wants to be perfect. So there's the imperfect cake. And then Pacey's, of course, always trying to put things back together for Andy. So he's like putting her mess. He's cleaning up her messes, right? And he's trying to make this perfect cake.
Right.
Cake back to perfection for her. And then also when Andy mentions a wedding in Venice to Pacey, this is, I think, one of the like more important things between them. He essentially sinks her dream and says that Venice will be sunken by then. His reaction to her even thinking that they would get married was very like, If you look at his face, he's just like, I don't know.
I noticed that too.
He basically, you know, was like, nope. Yeah.
He makes a joke about the whole thing. And in a way, it didn't feel like a joke. It felt like being shot down.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
He dodged it entirely. And he's been so lovey-dovey with her recently.
Right.
So it did feel a bit odd, but I picked up on it for sure. And he has a big eye reaction. Like his eyes go wide. Like what the fuck? Wedding.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Just feels so inconsistent with who his character is just in this episode. Mm-hmm. And another thing that frustrates me too about this whole thing is we're again told why Andy has a problem with like weddings and stuff like that, because it's like, obviously it's because of her family, and we can put that together by watching it. We're fans of the show. We're watching every episode. We know why this is the way it is for Andy, but for her to like spell it out to the audience of being like, well, because of my bad family life, this is why I just like associate negativity with wedding. And it's like, God damn it.
It's like too much. Yeah.
You don't have to tell us this. It's so bad.
Yeah. It's so bad. And it's just, adds to the bloat of the episode and how slow everything feels, because it's just like, why are we getting this scene? We don't need this. This isn't what we need.
It's trying to, I mean, this is the corners that they've been written into, because the only things they can really do is just like talk about their relationships. And I don't like that everyone just keeps getting paired. It's always these pairings. Group things to do so you get dynamics within
and
what's happening.
This was a chance to have a big group dynamic, big group scene. But we'd never really get them all dealing with the catering as a group.
Right.
It's all them individually until they're basically dancing at the end. And then they're still just dancing in pairs.
Exactly.
Yeah. I feel like that would have been a great opportunity for them all to have some type of experience together.
And it just also just feels even more inconsistent with these characters. So it's like the Jack Dawson situation with the bride is... Mm-hmm. Like the Dawson thing makes sense. That's the only thing that makes sense in this episode is Dawson, of course, just fucks up trying to help her. But it feels like the Jack character should have been Pacey. Like Pacey's the one that's talking about like why love is so great.
Yeah.
And he's Pacey the hero. Like that's who he's been growing into in this entire season by getting that teacher fired and taking initiative. Like he should be the one that like goes in and like tells her like it is. Like this is like...
Yeah.
Because that's like why he thinks love is so great, blah, blah, blah. But I do like seeing Jack do this. It's cool that Jack gets paired with Dawson because now I like seeing their friendship grow. And I do think they have really good chemistry together as friends. So that stuff's great, but not here. It's used in such a frivolous, stupid way that doesn't really make sense when you have like another character that could like fit that role way better.
Yeah. Yeah.
I kind of wanted to like break down this a little bit. So we see Jack give advice to Joey early on in the episode. And in general, we've seen more of Jack and Joey's friendship and him being like a good support to her. Like, I feel like more than Dawson has.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, you know, we see how that kind of plays out, how Joey like isn't totally honest with Dawson. And she was like, oh, I was looking for you earlier, but Dawson knows she went to Jack.
Well, what was a little bit weird about that was like, it was literally them walking into school and it's the conversation Joey was having with Jack in that moment. So I do kind of believe Joey when she maybe could have been looking for Dawson, but she just found Jack first. It was the first interaction of the day, but at the same time, it's the first interaction of the day. You didn't necessarily.
Yeah.
But anyway, sorry.
It's okay. So we think Dawson has learned from Jack, give advice or like, cause Dawson like sees Jack in action. Is like, wow, you did that. And like, and then later we see Dawson trying to comfort Joey.
Well, and also before that, Jack tells Dawson to force a connection with Joey, which I thought was interesting.
Really weird advice.
It's weird advice, but I think like what I saw there was that Dawson realizes that he actually doesn't need to force anything. Like, because later when he's talking to Joey, it seems very natural.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, for me, I think what Dawson sees is firsthand. I think, I don't know, my read on this is I completely agree. Pacey would have been the person to do this. But I think the reason Jack is the one to do this and what Dawson sees in that moment is... firsthand, Jack being caring and comforting and nurturing, and maybe for the first time, what Joey saw in Jack. Mm-hmm. Finally, he's like, oh, okay, cool. Like, I've seen this, the creative side of Jack with the movie. I've seen like the loyal side where he's helping out. Now I'm seeing like this caring side. Mm-hmm. That's what I've been missing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then we get in that conversation between Jack, between Jack and Dawson, where Jack is like, look, yeah, you're right. Joey has been coming to me more often, but that isn't undercutting how important you are to him or to her. And that isn't to like say you need to be more like me. You need to be like you. Mm-hmm. Because that is what she clearly is wanting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, you've known her because, you know, he said you've known her for so long. Interesting that he tells her to force a connection because, like, he just doesn't need to.
That's the line that just doesn't really make sense.
It doesn't make sense. I think it's
force
like,
a connection with him, with himself. Force yourself to make a connection.
Maybe, yeah.
Because he's getting in his own way of, you know, overthinking or underthinking these things.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's the way that I kind of like interpreted this. He needs to see this firsthand and then be told by this person, like, this isn't what you need to be. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. This is what makes me me. You find what makes you you.
I dig this because it's actually making me like this episode a little bit more because, so the first sequence in Dawson's bedroom is his mom giving him basically a pep talk on tenacity and why it's important to like take the bull by the horns in life. And obviously like, she's talking about his career and life, but really that's talking about him getting Joey back. And this entire season has been Dawson just anguishing and just being like mopey and Joey, please be with me again. And she's,
I'm going to make a movie about it. And then you'll see.
And that has sucked and it's been weird, but her advice to be tenacious and is kind of what he's been doing this entire season. He has been tenacious and it's been blowing up his face. And Gail, who's giving this advice, it blows up in her face because she was going to be tenacious and get Mitch Daddy back. But it turns out that he's dating Machen Amick. So it is kind of cool to see that the person that gave him advice is the advice that he's been kind of like, I don't know. It's like he's learned this already from his parents and that's why it's been failing. And so now he's actually learning from seeing Jack and seeing what, I don't know, an authentic relationship should look like. And now he's taking that and turning it into something different. So I don't, maybe that is good.
Yeah. Because Jack never is trying to do anything really. He's just reacting organically. Mm-hmm. Like when the way that he gets her to open the door is he's like, don't make me go get your mom.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, and he even says it like, I don't know, it was worth a try. Mm-hmm. You know, he's just he's just thinking.
He just seems genuinely like,
like this would work with me. I'm just going to do it, you know? And he's not doing what Dawson was trying, which was like profundity.
Forcing. He was forcing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I didn't actually make that connection. I've been sitting here trying to make that connection to like, don't accept failure. You know, failure is ultimately an opportunity for growth, which is what I was trying. That's the message I was thinking they were trying to say. Mm-hmm. But you make a good point that that's actually what's been failing them and it failed Gail. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until he tried a new approach that it worked or that he found something that quote unquote worked.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Who knows where this will go.
Next episode, they're going to, no kissy ever happened.
Should we talk about Gail wanting to get Mitch back?
I feel like we need to because it's
came out of nowhere.
It came out of fucking nowhere.
Yeah.
I mean, I know their whole separation has been very back and forth, which I actually do like. I think that makes it feel kind of real. Each person has had these moments where they have been the person to like, you know, twist the dagger, so to speak. So in this case, Mitch is the one who left, right? He chose to leave the house. So, but the idea that Gail needs to do something to get him back when he made the choice to leave, it's like, well, yes, I guess, but isn't it ultimately like his choice to return? I don't know. It just didn't make sense to me.
She's pulling something out of the Dawson playbook on how to get someone back. Like this big gesture of like, I need to
put
like,
on a
do
silver
something.
Dress.
Yeah. It's so fucking stupid.
Yes. And backfires in a way that, of course, you know, like I thought it was very, very comical. She comes in. Oh, where's your daddy? Where's that big sexy man? I'm going to get him and give him a big kiss. And then Dawson's like, I don't know, probably out jerking that hog.
Exactly.
And then he comes in literally the next person with the girl. Dawson spills champagne all over himself and then has to leave, leaving Gail completely by herself just to watch. It was like very, I don't know. I liked it. I thought it was done well in like a funny and interesting way, and also in like a symbolic way. She's there all by herself watching this happen.
I did like it. And I've been wondering also what this show is trying to tell us with Mitch going after Nicole Kennedy. I mean, like, Machen Amick is like really beautiful.
Yes.
But what does her character represent? She's like intellectual, super smart, a teacher. This is also the first time that we've ever even heard of Mitch as also a teacher.
Yeah.
So this is like a new arc for him. But it is interesting that like she scratches something that's like intellectual for him that like Gale is obviously not able to provide for him. And so I wonder if this is like that new route for him is maybe he learns from this experience, this separation. Maybe he finally throws away this pipe dream of the kelp, RIP. And I don't know, like goes somewhere intellectual now. Like this is like a new Mitch that, I mean, it sounds fucking crazy.
What if he becomes a father-son cinematic duo with Dawson?
Oh,
and
I'd
he's
love
like,
to see
you know
it.
What? I'll be the money behind these visions. I'll help. Because he's teaching, he's substitute teaching English right now because of Mr. Big Dickens, whatever that guy's name was.
RIP.
That so makes, I didn't put that together.
He's sub-teaching that. So, you know, he's like, I'm a literary buff. I've got a way with the words. I'll help edit your scripts and screenplays and I'll put up the money.
That'd be great if Mitch writes a screenplay about him trying to make the kelp. It's like him and his son cut from the same cloth. Like all they know how to relate to is their own stories.
Wouldn't it be great if he makes a movie about his last year, about the separation, and it's called God. The Kelp Days or something like that? And it also involves Dawson's making of his movie. So there's a meta film within a meta film.
So the Gale wanting Mitch back came out of left field and like felt really unbelievable. And then when we see Mitch come in and him talk to Dawson, he says something like, I'm allowed to like move on and like pursue my own path or like date other people. Like I'm allowed to do like that all felt more like believable and like aligned with like a character arc, you know, versus like Gale just doing whatever she's doing. So yeah, I kind of wonder if, I feel like someone wrote in saying that like there is a lot of character development for Mitch. So I wonder if we're going to see less of Gale and maybe see more like of Mitch's journey.
I wonder.
They are definitely seemingly giving Mitch more of a defined identity. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got his own apartment. So he's got his whole own location. That's just his. That was also supposed to be the Kelps. But
we're seeing him at school with a new job.
Yep.
Whereas Gale,
she's just always at home and we usually just see her at home.
And she like only talks offhandedly about her career. The only time that her career has ever made an impact on the show is when she interviewed the girls about what it's like to be a girl in 1999.
Don't forget the vital role she played in the making of Dawson's first movie because they needed a booth to record the ADR in. So, I mean,
true. Yeah, she is a key character.
Key.
I hope they give her something else to do.
Me too. And this felt like, in a way, the starting of that because one could see her trying this. She's trying to get him back. It backfires. Now, maybe that's the inciting incident that will allow us to engage with Gale's storyline. Now we'll see her try to do something to address why she thought she wanted to get Manmeet back. What she's going to do to get him back now or how she's going to be happy moving forward, whatever, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we could start to see that story. I doubt we will, but...
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be cool if we did?
Yeah.
Be so cool. Also, baby Alexander.
He's back.
Wow.
He's alive. Baby. Yeah, still a baby. I asked, has he grown? Like, is he the same size?
Time doesn't exist in the show. It snowed once.
That's
true. I don't know when this is supposed to take place.
I was really half expecting us just to get a random toddler running into a scene at some point and then be like, Alexander, you're here. Or him show up and he's like speaking, you know, he's like working at the ice house with a little baby apron on and he's like, here's your milk, sir. Alexander, they don't drink milk too.
Yeah, I want them to do a Boy Meets World because they had a little sister on that show, Morgan, and like the first couple seasons, it's like a 5-year-old, and then like a couple seasons go by and you're like, where the fuck did Morgan go? And then she comes back and she's like a teenager. They just like recasted her. So like I would love for that. I want Alexander to pop in, he's like 12 years old.
God. Yeah, because we're season two. There's six seasons. So theoretically, he'll be four by the end of the show. We won't be seeing much of him at that phase. What if we get him? He's like in middle school. They're just like, fuck it. Yeah.
I wonder if we'll ever get a time jump in the show.
Yeah, I wonder. Yeah. Show's so good.
I do have one thing I want to talk about when it comes to costuming, because a big part of Joey's character in this episode is about, I mean, this is who she is as a character. She tells everyone that she's fine, but really things are not fine. Right. And I thought it was interesting that early on before the wedding, her pre-wedding outfit is her wearing a brown coat, which is organic. It's natural. But her undershirt is like a red sweater. So it's like, that's like, I don't know, you could call it like her passions, her pain, like the reality of like what she's going through. So that's kind of like a nice touch to like nod that her character is going through something, but she's afraid to actually show it to the world. She has to cover it up.
Toning it down.
And besides Bessie's hair, that's the only thing that really like struck me with the costuming. Oh, I guess.
Oh, the Abby and Jen.
Oh, and Abby and Jen, yes. Yeah. And Jack is wearing like a green jacket too when he is talking to Joey, and that's natural, organic. I mean, that dude's a person of the earth.
And then at the wedding, they're all wearing the same thing.
Yeah.
I loved that Joey needed to go and get all of her friends to be caterers and or to be help or whatever. And then there's like 12 other people who are also serving food. So it's like, she brought in like three people. Yeah. I don't think she did much here as far as like helping, you know. I mean, why not just have like a bunch of random kids from the school at that point? Just bring the same extras from the school in, the same ones we see.
Yeah.
At least cast the fucking kids. Come on. That was her one fucking job. Now I'm angry. What the fuck? Fuck. Why didn't they do that? Why didn't they have Abby and Jen be helping and then piss off with champagne? What the fuck? Why did they have to be excluded?
Yeah.
Sorry, I know I'm late to like discussing some of this shit, but it's catching up with me.
No, it's frustrating. There are a million ways that they could have done this episode in a better, cooler way. Mm-hmm. Give everyone something to do that's like together, and then maybe Jen and Abby are working together, but the entire time they're working, they're drinking at the same time.
Yeah. They get caught drunk and they get kicked out.
Exactly.
Or something. Yeah.
And then that makes all the other characters react. Like, how does Dawson react to that? Of course, Jen, you would show up here drunk, just trying to have a fun time.
Yeah, and it was super random that Andy was the one to kick them out.
Why didn't we reorder this? And this could have been a big reason why Ty gets kicked out of the whole show, because he makes that whole fucking, like... Mm. Because they basically just had this, you're the Saturday night slut or whatever, right? Yeah, this could have been a great time to have Ty say that whole fucking thing. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, I mean, like, Bessie could have been the one to go talk to her friends.
I know. And then she could have gotten pulled away for the catering stuff. So then Dawson would have been left. Yeah. And then Jack comes around. It's like that. Yeah. It's just a lot of.
Lots of funny choices.
Why weren't we in the writer's room? Guys, I think we need to start a GoFundMe right now.
to remake Dawson's Creek.
Yes. We'll need what? What do you think, Cody? 10 million?
Per episode, at least.
At least. Okay, so, and then we're going to do a 250 episode first season. Yeah. So we're looking
bringing it back to the glory days.
We're going to need a really big budget, but I think it's doable if all of you guys listening tell your friends and donate like a couple mil.
Yeah, it makes me wonder what the studio pressures were for the show to force them into doing shit like this.
Yeah, I mean, it does make me question the value that the studio is bringing. If they just did an episode like this that made it through, that they're like, yeah, cool, let's push this one out. But then Buffy, we're hearing about how much they had to fight to get like a meaningful episode put out. Maybe studios aren't that great. Guys.
The worst.
Makes you think. Well, shall we wrap that episode up?
Yeah, get me out of here.
Yeah. Ratings, recommendations, and Peak Creek moment of the week. Who wants to go first?
I'll do it. I don't know what to give this episode. I think I'm going to give it a 3. It's bad. It's a bad episode. This is a bad episode. But James's point about like what Dawson actually learned from Jack and like seeing that, like, I think like that is good. I think those things are good. This is a fucked up episode and it's bad, but I think there are good things that are happening within the episode that like elevate it to a little bit. Instead of Dawson doing Dawson shit, Mm-hmm. I like seeing Dawson learn. I mean, he's a piece of shit, but every once in a while, like, you can see some glimmer of hope in there. So, like, I think that's important. But maybe I'm, you know what? I don't know. 2.5. Because everything else is so fucking bad. Yeah. I don't know.
Peak Creek
moment is Abby's death.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't really get too much into, like, the actual death. And, like, what? Because they could have killed her off in a million ways, right? Yeah. This is a pretty interesting way to kill off a character. It was unexpected. And I kind of like that it was unexpected and they didn't, like, make it too loud.
Did laugh out loud when she
died. Oh, I did laugh out loud when she died. I mean, this is Abby. She's a cartoon. Like, I do not, if this was, like, Mitch that died, I'd probably be way more emotionally affected. Yeah, yeah. But Abby is not a human being.
It was pure comedy. I mean, I know.
Comedy of errors.
I'm sure that they tried to serious it up a little bit, but it was funny.
Yeah.
It felt like it was written funny. I don't know. It made me laugh too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I am going to give this a 3. Also think it was not a great episode, but that it had great bones, and great bones. Like there, like it was there. Like I kind of understand. Like I said, the first watch, I did not like it at all. I felt it was super chaotic and I was like, what is happening? Second watch, a lot of things kind of grew on me after thinking about them. And I also thought Dawson wasn't too insufferable. He learned some things. And I also appreciated the costuming choices with Abby and Jen. I thought, like, with what they decided to do with that, that like, the meaning in that costuming was cool to me. So
that is really cool.
Yeah. Giving it a 3.
Peak Creek.
Bessie's hairdo. Yeah. I just can't quit. Like, I just couldn't get over it. Made me laugh lots of times. Loved it.
I'm going to give it a 1.5. I don't have many things to say about this episode. I like that Jack is a consistent voice of reason. I really liked seeing kind of like Abby back to her old like funny, mean self. She had definitely like a few moments that made me laugh. My Peak Creek was her impersonating Grams.
Yeah, that was good.
That was really fun. And then her last words being, don't laugh, that hurt you, baby. Yeah.
That was really good too. My rating is in line with Stella's. You guys were able to convince me to juice it just a little bit, but I'm going to go ahead and give this a 1.93. Look, you know, not every episode is going to be a winner. This one,
1.93.
This one wasn't, and I think we got to balance out the good with the bad, and that means admitting when bad episode. This is a bad episode, and it was very not enjoyable to watch outside of Abby's death and a few other little moments. So 1.93, Peak Creek moment of the week. I kind of want to say nothing because I did not, I did not like this episode, but. I think my Peak Creek moment of the week, because it just represents how I feel watching this, is when the ambulance pulls away and Jen is just standing in the street alone, wrapped in a blanket. Oh, like, nobody gives a fuck about her. That's kind of how I felt. Like, this show completely abandoned me. What the fuck am I doing here? How has my mom not been called and told to come pick me up? What's happening? So yeah, recommendations this week. You know, I've been going back and forth because I keep a list of recommendations. We took a little bit of a small break, and my recommendation feels out of line, but I think I'm just going to dive into it anyway. You know, game time decision, guys. Game time decision.
What's it going to be?
Okay, it is going to be a video game. Yep. All right. I am going to recommend it was new once upon a time. Believe it or not, that's true of most things. It was the new Prince of Persia video game.
Oh, I heard it's awesome.
It is fantastic. Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. I'm playing it on Xbox, but I think it's on just about everything. And it is a 2D platformer Metroidvania style game. Stella, you have mentioned a lot of games like this, the most recent of which would be Hollow Knight. But I think this game follows in the feeling of Hollow Knight. It is really unforgiving in certain areas. The platforming is super, super fun. The world is amazing. The music is great. And the combat, really cool. I love just running around the world, dashing, going back in time, zapping around. It's fun. So Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown, go play it.
But would you recommend the feature film with Jake Gyllenhaal as the Prince of Persia?
Yeah, yes. When I Googled it, that's what came up. So I was like...
Yeah, I think put that on while you're playing the video game. It's kind of like you have to do both at the same time.
Okay.
When I think of casting...
Yeah, you think of
the Prince of Persia. Uh-huh. Jake Gyllenhaal is top of the list.
Yep.
Insane.
Well, I am also going to recommend a video game.
What?
I've been playing nonstop. I've been playing The Cult of the Lamb, baby.
Oh, nice.
I've been playing it on the Switch. I think it's available all over the place. PlayStation, Xbox, all that. It is a indie game developed by Massive Monster. Came out in 2022. It follows a little lamb who is saved from this like god figure and has to repay their debt by creating a cult. And the character has to go on like little missions to collect resources and followers. And then you try and like maintain your cult. You get to like choose different attributes they might have. It's really fun. It's a good mix of like, you know, kind of, what are those games? The farming ones.
Yeah. Like a simulation farm sim.
Yeah.
Sim.
Where you're like getting, like doing little tasks and chores, and then you have to like go out and do some like battles and stuff.
It's like Stardew Valley, but evil.
It's really fun. The animation's really cute. Yeah, I've really, really enjoyed it.
I love Cult of the Lamb. I played a lot of it, and then I stopped, and I started it recently, and it's just so enjoyable. Yeah. I want to talk with you about what you're making your cult do, because you can make your cult do crazy things sometimes, you know, depending on how you build it. So very curious. It's got a lot of customization. It's a fantastic game.
Yeah, it's cool.
I am going to recommend a food item. This time.
Hey.
They are Mila soup dumplings.
Oh
my gosh. Mila. They are amazing. We have been buying them from New Seasons. You can find them in the frozen aisle, but you can also order them online at eatmila.com for those of you who might not have New Seasons. The company was founded by a Chinese-American couple with the hopes of leaving a legacy about Chinese food. They have a little bit of about page on their website. And they also have some other products that we haven't tried yet, but the soup dumplings are like just
so
the most juicy,
good, delicious
dumplings.
I know.
And they're like just for them being like frozen, you know, just, yeah, they're so good.
Oh my gosh, it's...
They have chicken pork and then like a shrimp.
Chicken or something like that.
Pork and then like a shrimp pork one. And they're super easy to make. You just steam them on the stovetop.
Yum, 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 yum.
They're so good.
We've been buying them like every time we go to New Seasons.
I've had other frozen soup dumplings before. And what usually happens is they come apart and then you no longer have the soup inside. Like a crack, some crack forms and you just have a normal dumpling. Mm-hmm. That's never happened. I don't think we've ever had that happen. And the broth inside it is so tasty. You guys want to have some soup dumplings?
I'm starving. I'm going to eat this table. this week, I'm recommending the Showtime limited series, The Curse.
Oh, nice.
A satirical dark dramedy starring Emma Stone and Nathan Fielder as Whitney and Asher, a newlywed couple who are filming an HGTV pilot about eco-conscious housing in a small New Mexico town with their producer, Dougie, played by Benny Safdie. The Curse is refreshingly unique and specific in this age where a lot of TV feels very samey and made for broad consumption. It awkwardly and hilariously explores the themes of white saviorism, racism, and the unreality of reality television as Whitney and Asher exploit an indigenous community unbeknownst to them due to their hyper-liberal perspective of thinking that they're in some way helping. It's the perfect blend of Nathan Fielder's comedy and Benny Safdie's body of work creating this bizarre tone of cringe that creates anxiety. It's hilarious and horrifying. And the finale, without spoiling it, is deeply satisfying in a challenging, bizarre way, leaving you wanting to talk and think about the show for years to come. It is a huge recommendation.
Really?
We just finished it.
Yeah, it was incredible.
Great.
Yeah.
We fell... I'll speak personally. I fell off. We were watching too many shows, and the way I know the show is successful is because it is painful to watch.
Yes.
It like sometimes hurts to watch what's happening on the screen. Mm-hmm. And in a way, especially if you're, you know, maybe expecting it to be more like Nathan Fielder's other work, it's like, what in the fuck am I watching here? I don't know what's happening. And I think that is really awesome. And I really want to finish it because I feel like it's artistic. Yes. You know what I mean? It just has that kind of feeling of being something that you want to pay attention to. But it's also challenging to watch.
Hard to watch.
It's like Twin Peaks The Return. Like, it's not giving
ding,
you...
Ding, ding.
Yeah,
there it is. Second time.
But like, it does not give you anything to work with. And the finale doesn't, there are a lot of loose ends and it does not tie up anything in a nice bow. It is instead giving you something to chew on that is extremely interesting. And I think ties up a lot of the themes really well in a way that you would not expect. So
thank you for the reminder because
it's worth it. Push forward. I know it's painful, but it's supposed to be.
Yeah. We had fallen off for a while and then like it had been weeks and we're like, okay, we got to do this.
Yeah.
We got to worth face that. Paint.
Yeah.
Let's go.
We can do it.
All right, y'all. So that about does it. Next time on Freaks and Creeks, we will be talking about season 2, episode 19, titled Abby Morgan, Rest in Peace. Just as it forces Joey to confront her own mother's death, Abby's drowning causes Jen to lose her faith in everything.
Oh, wow. She had so much faith to begin with.
I was going
to
say, her what faith?
Yeah. I feel like AI wrote these descriptions on Amazon.
We're getting down to the last few episodes of this season.
Yeah.
Believe I cannot believe that.
I can't wait. Everyone has said that season 3 is like the best. I cannot wait to get into it. Mm-hmm. Let's wrap this up. Let's go.
We're nearly there.
Stretch.
And what the fuck? I mean, why is this the episode that hits towards the tail? Is it just because they needed to get this episode out and this is when it happens? Does it normally happen almost at the end? God damn.
With like...
What? Like with
how bad this episode was. Just like this total stinker of an episode. I would think it's like in the middle. Mm. Not like almost at the end. Don't you want the momentum to keep like ratcheting up? And then they're just like, Abby's dead.
Episodic TV, baby. You never know what you're going to get.
Well, next time I can't wait to find out how impactful this main character's death in her town is. So
I'm excited to talk about it.
All right. Well, thank you all so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to our show and join us as we continue to set sail through Dawson's Creek one episode at a time. If you want more Freaks content, subscribe. Already said to do that. So instead, you can go visit our website, freaksandcreeks.com, and find us on Instagram at freaksandcreekspod, or write to us. And by us, I mean Stella, so she will stop crying and we have to stop unmarking emails at show@freaksandcreeks.com. Until next time,
bye-bye.
Five stars.